Hello and welcome to Men in Charge. I'm Kevin Decker.
And I'm Tony Flynn. Today's episode we have designed to accommodate the outcry from the medical industry to talk about... Because this has been too little talked of. Well, it's a disquieting subject, but it's one that Kevin wanted to discuss.
I did. And the title of today's episode is The Perfect Catheter. Tony's right. This is a big deal in Lower Heights where most of our sketches take place because there's a huge medical industry there because of the...
Men are catheterized here.
Well, yeah. Yeah, just continuously catheterized. And, of course, Lower Heights is a great source for human research subjects.
That's right. There are a lot of people languishing in the streets, uncatheterized. Medical vans do tour the streets every midnight and collect vagrant males and catheterize them.
That sounds disturbing, but remember, this is still Vichy America, listener.
So yeah, this is what happens. Americans in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania brought us to this point where people can be collected and catheterized. So I think we want to talk about not just any catheter. We're working continually toward the perfect catheter.
The perfect catheter. Now, the perfect catheter obviously performs its function in a stellar manner, 110%. Whatever it's drawing out, there's none of it left when it's done.
Right. There's an absence afterwards.
But then what else would the perfect catheter be?
Well, we want it to be clean, certainly.
Well, yeah, I would say that, you know, clean before it goes in. Yeah.
Right. It needs to be, certainly maybe scrubbed or at least rinsed before reused.
Yeah, before reuse. That's right. It would also be kind of – you would get to choose your color, like at the dentist. You know, they say cinnamon or chocolate fluoride, both of which I hate. And with this one, it would be cinnamon or chocolate catheter. That cinnamon catheter, actually, that hurts. That hurts just to think
about.
Well,
the extra tingle.
Yeah.
It is disquieting. But, Kevin, you've never been catheterized.
No, I've never been catheterized at all. I'm curious about what the experience is actually like.
Well, I was catheterized 12 years ago, I think, and it wasn't recreational in spite of what the fellas in the medical van said. I found it deeply uncomfortable, unnerving. It introduced a sense of frailty in me that I had never known.
Yeah.
The insertion I was anesthetized for, but the removal, alert for that.
Okay. I'm gritting my teeth here.
Well, this is the Vichy America. Unpleasant subjects
it's
do emerge.
It's like ripping the Band-Aid off, but from the inside out.
Yeah, but without the pleasure part of the ripping off of the Band-Aid.
There's no pleasure to it whatsoever.
No, none at all.
I, by the way, Tony, have been thinking about this perfect catheter situation, and the perfect catheter may be no catheter at all.
That's right.
Here's some other ideas.
Okay.
So I've designed the names of several things that could take the place of the catheter. One I call the sump pump. This is, I think, like a polystyrene cup that has some sort of glue on it and some sort of tube coming out of it that goes into the gutter. And you have to stay by the gutter to use it. But anyway, so that's the sump pump. And then there's something that I haven't come up with a design for, but it's called, alluringly, the French drain. I'll just let the listener figure out.
Well, that's back to the gutter.
And then last but not least, the DMZ runoff system.
Could you elaborate on that particular
system? Well, you know, a lot of people talk about the demilitarized zone down there. And the DMZ runoff system is a series of plastic canals and channeling that utilizes your pants leg. It doesn't work with shorts. That's the problem.
But, yeah, so it's not a warm weather apparatus.
No, and it's not useful at the beach. Definitely not. If you wear it at the beach, somebody will probably be like, hey, why do you have the gutters from your home running down your leg? And I don't know what the answer to that question is going to be.
I know, but you could say, well, they're not my gutters.
Yeah, there you go.
So you can separate yourself a little bit from the experience.
Right.
Kevin, I'm glad you've had the opportunity to dwell upon catheter alternatives.
Yeah, because the perfect catheter, as we have revealed, shockingly, may be no catheter at
like,
all.
As you and I go through the day, and all next week we can say, I'm wearing the perfect catheter.
There you go. And that puts the ball into your dialogue person's court.
Right. The stranger we've encountered on the street, he can back away for a moment, but maybe it'll inspire curiosity.
Well, now that the listener has found a way to unclutch their legs in lack of anxiety, maybe we should talk about the segments for today's episode.
I think we should.
Good.
The first segment starts a new romance novel series on Men in Charge. It's called Heaving Bosoms.
That's right. And because it's written and performed by women, we cannot be gotten into any trouble for saying that. I just want to mention that.
The title.
Yeah,
right.
It's not our thing.
No, it's not our thing. It was written by Ann Porter.
That's right.
We're not going to pay her, are we?
Oh, no.
No, we're not.
Part of the deal.
But this has a lively exchange between the author and announcer and the heroine who keeps trying to adjust her narrative as she goes.
So it's great because it not only breaks the fourth wall, but also the fifth and sixth wall.
It's broken nine walls
so
far.
That is amazing. That's a Peabody Award for us.
Yeah, it's too postmodern for most listeners.
It would be ethical to let Anne know when we win the Peabody that it was for her script, but...
That's not how we work at Men in Charge.
No.
Well, what's next, Kevin?
After that, we're going to hear briefly from our new sponsor, the Law Offices of Richard J. Garlick. If you don't have a legal problem right now that needs Richard J. Garlick's services, he will find one for you, and that's the miracle of how he works. If your neighbor, for example, has been doing carcass rendering in their backyard, for example, and the sound is just too loud.
And if you complain, he will sue you.
Right.
At which time you can call Richard J. Garlick.
That's right.
Yeah.
After that, another new segment also by Anne, Butch Tabby, feline detective. Do I have that correct?
Yes, you do. Yeah. Butch Tabby encounters all manner of danger. You think he's the sidekick of the team, but he's the real detective.
And I got to tell you, this is a great script, and I really, really, really was tempted to put the T.J. Hooker theme behind this. I have it in my music file. I'm just waiting for the right opportunity to use it, the T.J. Hooker theme.
Well, this may be the time.
Listener, you might want to blog about this.
Yeah, call in, and if you don't hear the T.J. Hooker theme, blog about it.
Yeah, blog about it, and then we won't read it.
Right.
Last but not least in today's episode, we return to the scummy world of Aiden and Largo, insufficiently violent mafia goons.
They're unemployed, and if you remember the last episode, which I think aired last year sometime,
but the listener
would remember.
Sure, they blog.
Anyway, Aiden and Largo are waiting for the bus and are kidnapped by a criminal mastermind and her accountant husband and their young son, little Leroy.
Yeah.
And they're held for ransom in order to get them to commit a crime. And we'll find out this time what the crime actually is. But in any case, Aiden and Largo will stumble through it somehow.
Let's just hope that their captor has been serving them their peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with the crusts cut off.
Yeah. Otherwise, the chains will rattle.
Greetings, listener. Shh. How often do any of us have the opportunity to listen in on the hallowed process of a writer at work? Public radio listeners are by nature fascinated by the mysteries of literary creation. But sadly, this being Men in Charge, today we're only listening in on Madge Mudd, a paid-by-the-word hack who has risen almost halfway up the ranks of the self-published. So now, Heaving Bosoms, Episode 1.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Say what you want. So where are we today? Turn on the computer. Cold coffee, and I can figure out the latest little romance novel, Chippy. All right, honey, let's talk about you and your little run across the moors.
Oh, what a joy to be scampering across the moors on such a blustery day. My limbs are chilled by the impending typhoon, and my ample bosom, heaving from the exertion of my trek, rebels against the tightness of my bodice. But at least my eyeliner is perfect.
Wait, no. There are no typhoons on the moors, and you can't say that last part about the makeup.
Oh, yes, I can. Because the only thing I care about is the mysterious stranger who approaches on his bounding black steed, Grantley Ridgely, broad-chested dark knight of the Highlands. Besides, Madge, I'm no Chippy.
Ha! And if he's so mysterious, how come you know his name?
Whoa, easy, Ramrod. Chippy?
Oh, tis nothing. Just a gadding fancy of my fevered intellect. But what business is it of yours, sir? I am a simple country girl, striving to regain my virginal state.
Virginal state? That must be a country you've never visited.
Wretched scold, how dare you?
Wait, what? Are you a maiden possessed? To whom do you speak?
To whom? To whom? I need a cocktail.
Oh, pay it no mind, sir. I speak only to the yapping spaniel at my side. Come, my little saucy boy.
Right in the barks, Madge.
Arf. Arf, sweetheart.
You are too delicate to be out in this blustery weather, miss. Please, let me offer you a ride to the nearest cottage. Slip one of your dainty feet in my stirrup, and I will, with my strong, manly arms, lift your lissome frame onto my fearsome steed.
Oh, sir, you are too kind. In truth, I do fear for my safety out here on the unforgiving moor.
Elspeth, come on! You can do better than this, meat face. Dial it down, honey, or the book will end in 2 pages.
But, sir, I don't know you, and for you to take such liberties...
But, miss, the extreme circumstances warrant desperate measures. Allow me.
But, sir, your massive tree-like arms too easily encircle my slim, pliant waist.
Oh, please. Even I, as the announcer, feel the need to step in right here and object to this sexist fantasy. It's offensive.
She's nothing but a shameless trollop.
That's as clear as the dewy glow on her heaving bosoms. Even the dog agrees.
I'm no trollop.
Of course not, miss. I see your smoldering innocence writ plainly on your lovely visage.
Oh, sir, I am deeply indebted to your kindness. So deeply.
'Tis but my duty, as the wealthiest landowner for miles around.
Duty? Madge, don't make him say duty. I want him to say pleasure at least.
Cool your jets, you blousy wanton. At least I gave him lots of cash.
But wait, doesn't the difference in their incomes further reinforce these gender stereotypes?
Cash is cash.
Stop!
Miss, what is it? Why do you cry out in your irresistible silvery tones?
Oh, sir, I grow faint. How good are you at CPR? Maybe a little mouth-to-mouth?
Okay. I'm putting a stop to these shenanigans right now. This is listener-supported public radio.
But I have him right where I want him. We can't stop now.
Oh, yes, we can. Madge, turn off your computer. It's time for Elspeth to cool her digital heels for a day or two.
Amen, sister. Elspeth has stirred up quite enough trouble for one episode. I think next time we're going to have to make things a little more complicated for our mouthy Jezebel.
Hey, no fair. I'm getting double-teamed by a public radio announcer and a failed Pulp Fiction writer.
Oh no, miss. You talk nonsense. I fear that the rigors of this wintry moor have overcome your delicate, maidenly constitution.
Help me, sir. Surely the remedy is in the touch of your...
You powered down not a moment too soon, Madge.
That's quite enough heaving bosoms for one day. It's time for me to spend the afternoon bending an elbow at the Dewdrop Inn with my pals Judy and Lydia.
Well, listener, that's all the time we have for the romance of heaving bosoms. Tune in next time when we hear Elspeth say...
Grandly, shall we groom my spaniel?
And we hear Madge say...
Straighten up, Elspeth, or the dog loses his speaking part.
Hey, Madge, can the dog and I catch a ride with you down to the Dewdrop? The following is an urgent announcement from the law offices of Richard J. Garlick.
Have you been mugged in the park? Did you step on a carelessly discarded piece of moon rock? Was your attempt at mugging a moon worshiper foiled by a thrown piece of moon rock? Then don't walk, but run straight to the nearest phone booth and call the law offices of Richard J. Garlick.
And daughters.
Those are my daughters, Tabitha and Tegan. When you call, one of these angels will jump right onto logging your case, no matter how unwinnable. They'll ask you all our pro forma questions like, have you been attacked by a spider? Has a spider been attacked by you? And even if you've developed strange mutant powers after biting a spider.
We take any case. If you call in today, we'll even suggest some ways you might sue friends and family for seemingly inconsequential things.
Why not earn a few Benjamins from that last disastrous Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, bless your heart, Tegan. Chair legs, dog legs, peg legs. If you catch your foot on it, we can win your liability case over it.
Thank you, Tegan.
I'm Tabitha.
Right. And a reminder, you can only get the Richard J. Garlic treatment at the law offices of Richard J. Garlic.
And daughters.
You get the benefit of three generations of legal expertise if you count Tegan's stepson Marshall, who used to file documents for us. So drop a dime and give us a call.
Dad, you need to forgive Marshall for spilling coffee in your lap. It was just two times.
That's the law offices of Richard J. Garlic, spelled G-H-A-R-L-I-C-H.
And daughters.
Howdy, folks. Sheriff Kors here with an update on the latest in crime-fighting techniques from those of us serving the Lower Heights community. Innovation is the most important tool that we police officers have in our arsenal. Well, other than our actual arsenal, the overwhelming firepower that the U.S. military has bequeathed to local police departments everywhere. I mean, who wouldn't want to have armored vehicles, grenade launchers, and M16 assault rifles? But I digress. Today we're going to listen in on our new thug-busting duo, Lieutenant Leslie Lugerhafter.
Hi, all. Great to be here.
And his highly trained partner, Butch Tabby, feline detective.
Meow.
I've just gotten a call on the scanner that there's a 1065 in progress. That's an armed robbery at the Lower Heights Savings and Scam.
Okay, Sheriff Kors, hot dog. Whoops, sorry about that, Butch. Let's roll.
Wow.
Butch Tabby's the best detective in the world, but I'm getting mighty tired of finding his fur all over my uniform trousers.
Well, Butch, this is our big chance. Let's strap on our bulletproof vests. Ow! 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 Okay, well, okay then. I've got mine on anyway. It's only a few little scratch marks. I'll just get some band-aids on the way back to the station. Right now, it's time to take us down some perps. Butch, you head around the back and cover the rear entrance. I'll head in the front. All right, you two. Hands up and nobody gets hurt.
Ha! One cop? And a scrawny one at that? I think I'll take my chances out the back door. Hank, you got the goods?
We're almost set, Manny. Just a few more drawers and a little disincentive here for little officer Kitty Cat. And we're on our way.
Kitty Cat? I'll have you know I'm a highly trained... Ah! Oh! Sheriff Kors! Sheriff Kors! Shots fired, I repeat, shots fired! I'm pinned down inside the bank by the gumball machine. Send backup!
Let's go, boys. Leslie's out of quarters.
Hurry up, Hank. There are some real cops on their way.
I heard that!
Well, let's head out the back, Manny. Here, take a couple of those bags.
Huh, they're heavy.
The car! Where'd you leave the car? And get this stupid cat out from underfoot. Ow! Ow! He's shredding my pants. And he bit my ankles.
Just leave the coins, Hank. What were you thinking about hauling coins?
That's what I use for the gumball machine.
We've got to get out of here. Just kick that cat and...
Ow!
Get this cat off me! Hank, help!
Need a little help, boys. Okay, Butch, that's enough. Good job, little buddy.
Wow.
Okay, Leslie, read them their rights, cuff them, and frisk them.
You got it, Sheriff. Oh, disgusting! What's that in his pocket?
Hairballs, Leslie. There's nothing you can do. It's hairballs.
Manny, charge!
It's the bloody gayest thing since cheese.
And now it's time for Aiden and Largo, Underemployed Mafia Goons. Tonight's episode, Aiden and Largo try insurance fraud. Aiden and Largo marooned in Lower Heights after being fired by their former boss for being insufficiently violent are kidnapped off the street by a criminal mastermind, her accountant husband, and their young son. We now join Aiden and Largo as they're manacled inside a tidy three-car suburban garage in Sun-Blanched Estates, an elegant treeless neighborhood just outside Lower Heights.
I tell you, Aiden, what I find worst about being manacled inside this tidy three-car garage in a faceless yet expensive suburban neighborhood is that, with the daily waffles and the lack of exercise, my belly is pushing uncomfortably into my belt. I wish I could reach down far enough to loosen things by at least one belt hole.
I agree, Largo. I, too, am restless in captivity. But perhaps tomorrow morning you should not ask for extra helpings.
You are surely right, Aiden. Please remind me in time tomorrow morning. I think perhaps this evening I will ask for only a light salad.
Myself, I have grown weary of these salads. Judy, I think, overdoes the radicchio, and she needs a lighter touch on the balsamic vinegar.
I think if we both speak to her about it together, she will take our concerns seriously. If I alone object, she will laugh.
Yes, we do amuse Judy, though it is not clear why. As her captives, we had every legitimate expectation of sharing little Leroy's bedroom with him, but no. As a 13-year-old, little Leroy was entitled to his adolescent privacy, she said.
Laughing.
Yes, laughing. At us. When I was at the age of little Leroy, I shared a room with dozens of young incarcerees like myself. Except when I misbehaved and was sent to solitary. That was the only privacy I ever knew.
Maybe Judy is punishing little Leroy with solitary in his room, and that's why we can't share it.
I do not think so. He seems very happy in his sulking.
So, boys, ready to get to work? Earn your keep? Burn off those extra waffles?
Since we are here against our will, Judy, I hardly think we are obligated to earn our keep.
Don't feel obligated, then. Just earn your keep. I've got a job for you. Do it or not, but if not, your hotel bill is going to be massive.
Wait a minute, Judy. If you want Largo and me to do a job for you, why not just hire us? Why the abduction and ransom?
Try to keep up, Aiden. I'm using part of the ransom, the money you make from this job, to pay you.
Aiden, I worry that Judy's logic may be unassailable. Let's hear her out. If we play along, maybe I'll be able to loosen my belt from all the waffles.
Okay, Judy, what job do you have in mind for us?
It's simple insurance fraud. I assume neither of you has any particular ethical objections to a little insurance fraud.
Will widows and orphans be divested of their savings as a result of our actions?
Maybe. Or perhaps not. Not if they cancel their policies in time.
Well, that's good enough for me. We don't want to insult widows and orphans by not acknowledging their agency in their own decision-making. Unmanacle us, Judy.
Yes, Judy. Unmanacle us. I need to loosen my belt by at least one belt hole. But keep your key nearby in case your particular brand of insurance fraud does not appeal to me. Very well, then. What's the plan?
All you need to do is wander through traffic on Southwest Main Street and be gently struck by cars. You guys are built like concrete pillars. You'll hardly feel a thing.
Even so, I do not think we would enjoy such an enterprise. But because Largo and I are now unmanacled, perhaps we will just tip our hats goodbye and be on our way.
I wouldn't if I were you. You'll never find your way out of this suburban neighborhood alone. There's no bus service, and no one will give a ride to guys who look like you two if you try to hitchhike. Besides, I've made veal manicotti for dinner.
Your argument is compelling, Judy. But what did you mean by us being gently struck by cars?
You see, Largo, I've taken out insurance policies on each of you. All you have to do is be hit a glancing blow by an oncoming car, cry out in fake pain, fall to the ground, and sue the driver. I'll be the witness. Get hit a few times a week this summer, and we'll consider your ransom paid.
Aiden, what do you think?
Well, it would get us out of the garage for a while, and the fresh air and exercise would do us both a world of good.
Plus, there's the civic benefit. Traffic on Southwest Main is way too fast. After you and Largo are hit a couple times, it should slow down a lot.
Very well, then. But this job had better not make us late for the veal manicotti.
That's all the time we have now for Aiden and Largo, underemployed mafia goons. Tune in again next time when we'll hear...
You moron! Look what you did to my car! The whole front end is smashed in.
You should not have called him a moron, lady. Now he will tear off your side view mirror.
Largo, why didn't you fall down the way you were supposed to?
My suit has been recently dry cleaned. I did not want the fabric to pick up any road oils.
I'm going to sue the three of you.
Kevin, were you offended by the heaving bosoms, or were you unnaturally stirred? What was your reaction to the left and the right bosoms heaving?
Well, as the listener probably noted, there was a lot of inappropriate touching in that episode between men and men, women and men, dogs and men, women and dogs. And I just – that just really sets me off.
Yeah, I don't know if it's in the men in charge tradition to tamper with good taste.
Yeah. Oh, there's somebody calling in. Listener really wants to know.
I'm going to zap that.
Okay. That's okay.
Well, no, I didn't go with the listener left to know, but now we'll never know because no. I turned off my phone.
He hit
decline because I'm in a spiteful mood.
I wish that the decline button would actually allow you other things other than can't talk right now or call you back later. Things like this is the wrong phone number or you just blew up the Statue of Liberty or something fun like that.
Yeah, something a little more typical that we would use. Better boilerplate that we would use in Men in Charge.
So getting back to the inappropriateness and the fact that we're likely to get sued for airing heaping bosoms, there will be more episodes coming up within the next couple of episodes of Men in Charge.
Yes, because it's a way that you, the listener, can be attentive to each twist of the plot and nuance of the dialogue. We're going to be having a succession of them in both the upcoming episodes.
And that's something to look forward to. Well, it looks like we're about out of time today, so let me thank The Bad Plus for our theme song, 7-Minute Mind. Let me also thank our cast, Ann Porter, Nancy Roth, Kevin Decker, Liz Rognes, Misha Schramm, Davis Hill, Jody Stewart-Strobel, and Tony Flynn.
We'd also like to thank the three people who share a tricorn hat, Carrie Boyce, Vern Windham, and the only man who likes his ice cream unpasteurized, Brian Lindsay.